Good morning. It is 12:30. You are in studio with Kevin, and for the first time, we're actually going to also go live on Facebook. You can access that via My Audio Face or via CKMS 1027. Either Facebook page should get you a live feed, so join us there. And very pleased to have with us in studio Mr. Todd Elson. Todd, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing well.
It's good to be here.
Great.
And by the way, it is afternoon. You said good morning.
I said good morning again, didn't I?
It's morning somewhere.
I do that every time. Exactly. Well, it's how I roll. So there we go. Look at that.
Well, hey, everybody.
This is exciting, although there's microphones in your way. There we go. I'm going to move that one so that we can see you. I mean, otherwise, yeah, there's no point. We can't have the show up, and it's on a weird delay. So if we watch that, we'll be all messed up. I'm not going to look at it anymore. So, yeah, so thanks, Todd. This is awesome. You came in from Brampton?
I did.
And were you worried about the snowstorm yesterday when they were they making it a big deal out there?
They sure were. It was supposed to be the 10 centimeters didn't come.
Oh, we were up to like 15, I think they were saying. And we got two little flurries at night. Most of it melted. And by the morning, there was a small little.
I was upset when I heard it was coming. I was looking forward to coming here.
Well, I know. Well, me too. So I'm glad you did. Yeah. So
glad it didn't come.
So where do we want to start? Well, how about we do this? Because I've got a, not a shtick, that's the wrong word to use, but I'm trying to develop a style, as they say, you know, how Johnny's got his Here Johnny and all that. So I'm way early in this and not comparing myself in any way to him, but what I've been doing to guests when they've come in is I've just asked them give us a bit of an intro on themselves, starting with where you were born and how that got you to here, and literally take that question and do what you wish with it. You can give us the short version, or we can be here all hour on that answer alone.
How long do we have?
You've got 50 some minutes, so go for it.
Well, yeah, I was actually born not too far from here. I was born in Guelph. The town of Guelph, and I didn't live there too long, but moved to Willowdale and then to Brampton, which was then Bramley, and I've been there most of my life. I used to say I've been there all my life, and people would say, not yet, you haven't.
Good point.
So I've been there most of my life so far.
That's true.
So, from Brampton, just growing up, I know we have a couple of songs and playlists to go through today, but part of that and the songs that I like and define people growing up in Brampton, no different than anywhere else. You know, you get to your likes and dislikes. For me, it was music growing up, and I ended up after high school going to school for music. So I was in school at Fanshawe College, Music Industry Arts, and it was a great time, left there, and actually worked for Warner Brothers for 3 years, just
That's
about.
Right. Warner Chapel.
Warner Chapel division, Music. Right? It was the publishing division for them, and it was a great time, great experience. And I wish I could have stayed. Unfortunately, we were on the cusp of the massive change in the music business, going from the analog to the digital to the internet. And it was really...
It was CDs, the sort of the main medium then, or was it still cassette? I'm trying to remember.
It was in that business, there was DAT, digital audio tape.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So we had digital audio tape then. And that was exciting because you had some high quality and high speed on the tape. But that didn't last very long either. The CD was there at the same time, and then we moved into the MP3s and internets. Here we are, 20 years later, 23, 25 years later, and we're streaming, right? But it was it started back then. So great fun, but I had to make a change. So I was talking about getting married and having kids, and I did get married. So I was looking elsewhere, and I ended up. And for the last 23 years, I've been working in insurance, which has been really good for me. And in the same time, keeping my hobby music in the back. I've played with several bands, but one in particular recently, we toured around a little bit. It was great fun. Unfortunately, you don't make a ton of money doing that, so it's just a hobby. But right now, where I am, I've left a job recently to become the director of the benefits division at FCA Benefits. That's still insurance. Okay. And we look after compensation plans for companies.
Cool.
So that includes benefits, pensions, HRIS systems, that's human resource information systems for companies. And, you know, it's interesting, different than the music business, but it's allowed me to continue to pursue my hobby in the background and personally and continue to play live shows, which I like to do. And currently in the background, working on my own album right now.
Okay. Yeah. So you now you mentioned when we were talking earlier. So what kind of music is the? Well, tell us more. Yeah, where are you at with the solo stuff, and what kind of music is it?
I'm my background in music goes right across the board, and my influence could go right from old country to heavy metal to Metallica to Pantera, as you know. To mm-hmm. If it's a good song to me, it's a great song. So my influences are wide, but my true love when I write music and when I play music is more of an acoustic rock kind of style. Some of it's a little heavier, some of it's a little lighter, but it's not poppy, it's not country, it's somewhere in between.
Okay.
And I would compare my voice, although not duplicated or just imitated, really, as Don Henley. That's kind of my kind of vocal style.
Mm.
So I really do like that kind of music. I like music with a great story, with mm-hmm. Great lyrics, and you can hear them, and a lot of good acoustic guitar with some great support in the back.
So does that mean are you going to sing Desperado for us, or is that?
Well, if I could come back with my guitar, I could do it. But no, nothing like that on the album, though.
No, okay, but that would be one of your influences.
Oh yeah, big influence for sure.
I remember, yeah. So we actually go back quite a ways. It was funny because my daughters like to keep up with what I'm doing with the show, and they said, okay, so who's coming on? Because last week what I did, you're in pretty rare company, Todd, because depending on how, and it's become a running joke with one of the guys that's at the studio, but depends where we count what my first official show was. But even stretching back into my other show and counting it, I think you're like guest four. So you're in that, you know, that select few that are in the first whatever number I'm going to use. I'll be saying that forever. I'll be like, you're in the first 503, Mr.
I bet you say that to all the guests.
Oh, right? Well, no. Hey, you're the only number four.
I'm the only number four. Yeah. Well, somebody's got to be number four.
So, that's right.
I'm happy to be here.
Hey, in baseball, that's a very important. That's the cleanup position.
That's true. That is very true.
You know, so last week I didn't have a guest because I was testing. I decided to test the Facebook without a guest because I tried one or two shows before that the technology was there, but I didn't know how to use it. And I didn't feel comfortable trying to put somebody on the spot and say, okay, as they walked in, by the way, we're going to do Facebook, and I don't exactly know how it works.
That's what you did to me.
Well, I gave you an hour's notice.
At least Kevin and I know each other well, so I could be put on the spot.
So, and I had done some testing, so I knew it would be working, which so far, and we're still seem to be live, so I guess that's a good thing. We haven't gotten any like major complaints, although I turned the phone off, so in case people call, we can't hear them anyways.
No message either.
Nope. So the kids were asking me, well, who's on? And then I said, Todd. I said, Todd Elson. And they're first to go, who? And I said, well, actually, you know Todd, or you know of him. And I was trying to remember, I think you've met both of my girls
at
various points, but it's been a couple of years probably. So I tried as best I could to explain. They were like, okay. And they left it at that. But I was trying to think back. I guess it was 25 years almost, maybe longer that because we met when you were at Fanshawe. You went to London to go to Fanshawe in what, 90 or no?
89.
Okay. Yeah. And I moved to London as well in 89. And we met up at working at 7-Eleven together. Or as I like used to say when I would want to impress people, I worked for Southland Corporation back when I,
Well, for those of you who want to know more detail, Kevin was the assistant manager at the store.
I was.
So I answered to Kevin.
For a little while. Yeah. Then for a variety of reasons, I got mysteriously transferred out of that store.
We don't need to talk about that.
No, we won't get into the details other than I repeatedly got transferred. And eventually, after there was no stores left in London for me to be transferred from, I got transferred to Windsor. So maybe we'll get into that.
That's a whole program.
That's going back quite a ways. And those are some good times. Honestly, we could pick any one thing in there and go off for an hour, I think. Because I know we work together, but we'd hang out together once in a while. We didn't go out. I don't remember going out very often. Like, I think we just hang out at somebody's place or whatever.
Or I was a student. My cousin Jerry, I think whoever's listening may have watched, Kevin did a tribute to him on the show not too long ago. But we lived together and we're students, working, starting out in life, and didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah, that was a good couple of years. I stayed there longer. So you left after Fanshawe, and then did you work straight for Warner Chappell?
Yeah, I got lucky. I was I don't know if I was one of the few, but I put resumes out, a lot of them, and I picked up that job a week after coming home from school. So I started working with Warner Brothers, Warner Chappell Music, is their publishing division, right out of school.
So did you have any kind of cool encounters?
Yeah, back then my job was in the they called it the duplication engineer. Really, but I don't know.
So you worked the copy machine?
Yeah, basically, and the copy machines then, the ditto machine.
Oh, yeah, those are good. You can't inhale that stuff too much.
No, they had a high-tech copy machine, but that's really the high-tech stuff. No, but my office, I had something similar to the radio station here, a board and duplication and DAT tape and reel-to-reel for master tapes. So we did some duplication, some splicing, but a lot of my job was cataloging the Canadian songwriters' songs.
Okay.
And what I did is I assisted the head of A&R, which is Artist and Repertoire, for those who don't know, to promote the Canadian songwriters' songs to international artists.
Okay.
So, I could go to the president of Warner Chappell or the head of A&R, who at the time was Jeff Kulawick. And say, hey, what about this idea? And he'd say, yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe we should send that out. The decision was always theirs, the president and the head.
You'd be listening to songs from Canadian artists that they'd send in with the intent of getting an artist to record it?
Yeah, so the publishing division, really, that's what it is you would get a publishing deal as a songwriter or a band.
Okay.
And the publishing company's job is to get you signed to a record label or to a deal where your song is being covered by another international artist. So I would basically, in coordination with the head of A&R, is put the packages together to go out to them. So, you saw a lot of international artists we'd send them to, and mostly their managers.
Okay.
But it was fun because you get to see, there's a lot of talented people that don't really go very far, and they should have. And
that's one of the biggest surprises that I found in doing this is the amount of talent that's there, and that does not equate into commercial success automatically.
No, right? Yeah, and all of these artists, it's a cliche, I think, in that business, is it takes, you got 20 years to write your first album, all this time to write.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah,
and then you get signed and you have 6 months, 6 weeks, to do another one, right? After more, and it gets more pressure on some people. Some people don't like it.
Mm.
And then other people that are talented, they don't get hurt at the right time and they get overlooked. And you've probably seen it too. You've seen it where there's people who are very popular who really aren't as talented as some of the other folks. So.
Oh yeah. I'm constantly amazed by that, and that's one of the things I really like about being able to do radio right now, and meeting and hearing a lot of great local music and meeting the artists. Not everybody is the best, and there's a million different genres, but it is quite amazing. There's a ton of, like you said, really talented, and there's so many different circumstances that come in, right? I'm sure there's some really successful or very talented folks that just weren't able to continue for, you know, life reasons, right? They just couldn't carry on anymore because it's, let's face it, it's lots has changed in music, but I think one thing that hasn't is when you're starting out, nobody's giving you any money.
No, it's tough.
So, and you know, so you, how do you get funded? You know, it's, and it's, even to this day, I would say it's, the business model is a challenge. It's certainly not at the artist's end typically. So even if you are having some success, it doesn't necessarily mean you're making any money.
No, right? Exactly. But to your, coming back to your original question, some of the cool things and the people I met.
Yeah.
I saw the Tea Party early in their career.
Okay.
They were signed to Warner Chappell and got to see them back in, 92, 93. Maybe it was more like 94. And as a young band starting up, and that's fun. And
then, could you tell, did you have a sense when you sort of first heard them or saw them that you're like, okay, these guys, will be on a top 10 or a top 40.
Yeah, there was there was some things with them. I mean, the cliche with Jeff Martin, who's the lead singer, is he looks a lot and sounds a lot like Jim Morrison of the Doors. I mean, he has his own style as well. But for sure, they were three-piece band that sounded so big. And Warner Chappell had Spirit of the West and Rio Statics, and they had all kinds of other individual songwriters that wrote some great songs and were covered a lot of country they did. But Jeff Kulawick did a lot of the alternative, so he moved from there to Virgin Records to do a lot of
Is he still in the industry, or is he retired?
No, I lost touch with Jeff quite some time ago because he left Virgin and he was going to do his own thing, and I don't know where he is now.
Is it true that everybody only works at Virgin once? I don't know.
I've never worked there, so I haven't had my opportunity yet.
There's a first time for everybody.
We should try that theory out. Get them on the phone.
Yeah, well, you know, we could. Yeah, I'll use my Virgin mobile.
I
don't know. Don't know. I don't know what any of this means. It was this was scripted to me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Richard Branson, do you have his number?
No. Oh, well, you know, he's so busy. I don't want to overtake it at my space. Yeah, you know, I've got him. He's doing some stuff for me on an island somewhere.
He'd probably take your call, but you don't want to bother him, right?
You know, I've got stuff to do, right? So maybe I'll try and remember if it comes up.
Okay,
the next thing. So yeah. So what's the band? So the solo album that you're working on, that's like a personal project. Now, are you going to do you have a recording studio or the capability to do this at home?
I do. Yeah.
And like, will the album actually get? Is there a plan to have it kind of released this year, or is
be this year, probably around the fall.
Okay.
With doing this personally, I don't do this full time. So it's after hours. It takes time.
Awesome.
A little more time, but I'm working on a couple of names for the album, and I should have the sort of the artwork and the name and the title and the list of songs.
And this is all going to be all Todd from end to end.
Yep. Yeah, I'll ask other people to play on it, but it'll be all songs that I wrote.
Right. And then, but I mean, the artwork and all that, you're going to pull it all together.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. We had one of the fellas, Rob McKenna, who was possibly the first guest. Again, we debate that, him and I. He was technically the first guest, maybe the second guest. Depends how we look at it. But he had a project. He's released a project. Some similarities to what you're describing, in that he pretty much did it all himself. I think it was him and his brother have a project called the Robot Apocalypse. And what was really neat talking to him about, because they just released this, but some of the stuff, one of the things that he did was get people to play on it, and they would record their piece, you know, wherever, send it to him, and then he'd mix it in. And it's just amazing. The stuff just sounds incredible.
Technology that way is awesome. It's great.
I mean, yeah, that's one of the, I guess, upsides of the upheaval. I mean, the downside that we'll talk about maybe a bit later. But when they came out, he ended up putting out online, so Bandcamp and that stuff. But they also did a vinyl release. Is that something, are you going to look at maybe doing vinyl or CD?
That would be really cool, but I haven't got that far really yet. Okay. But I think that would be...
Cassette is even something of a comeback on these limited runs. I guess the again, the technology is allowing these things to happen at an affordable cost for independent and small runs, which, I mean, I remember when, and you probably would have dealt with that at or seen it when you were at Warner, but back then, I mean, CDs, well, Jerry, we were talking about Jerry at one point had launched a business where he was building clocks.
Cadence, right? Yeah, it's called Cadence, yeah.
And he had come up, so, I mean, he had a few different designs, but I remember one of them was built around the blank CDs, the, just doing different art stuff. And so he was getting all kinds of pricing, and it was insane, the volumes that were needed to, and these were blank, as far as I know. You couldn't just, like, I think this was before any kind of CDR, any home recording for computers was even happening.
That was a long time ago.
So you didn't just go buy this stuff. You had to be in the business or have some connection to the industry and order really massive runs. So it's kind of cool. There's a band, another band I know that just put out an album. It's Grébert. We may as well mention them. Cambridge duo, Grébert, G-R-E-B-E-R. Sludge metal, quite a, you're talking about Tea Party being three guys sounding big. These guys is two of them. It's incredible. The music that I've heard, I mean, it's a bass and drum, no guitar, bassist, drummer and vocals. And it is hard to imagine this is just two guys making all that come together. It's pretty, pretty powerful. But they did that. They did vinyl, cassette, CD and online. So anyhow,
no, I think that's great. For me with cassette though, I'd rather see the picture of the cassette,
yeah,
and be able to fast, you know, jump to a song. You know, I was listening to one of my old recordings on a cassette the other day, because that's where I recorded a 4-track from way back.
Okay.
And having to press fast forward and stop and hear where it was, that was just, I'm beyond.
How
it
was
now.
The quality? So the 4-track was still okay.
Yeah, you know, the quality was good. It was okay. It was still good, but the time now to do that and fast forward and rewind, for all of you who are too young to remember that.
They're on Google now, going 4-track.
Yeah, you just pick your song, pick the spot, and go. So I'd rather, I don't know about cassette for me, but CD, vinyl is just great. I mean, vinyl's classic, and
it's really coming back. And I mean, I'm not enough of an expert to hear those sound differences, but people will play them on old, you know, old equipment with older speakers, and they hear this richness, and I'm like, okay.
Well, you know, the real cool thing, I have a friend in Ottawa. If I can give him a plug.
I don't have any friends, but no, okay. Well, no, I have a family in Ottawa.
Well, I'll be your friend. It's okay. You know, he owns a restaurant in Ottawa called the Wellington Gastropub, and he runs a record club once a month every Tuesday or second Tuesday, where they spin albums. And speaking about old speakers, what they did is they brought brand new, high quality acoustic speakers and a real high quality turntable, and you sit for 2 hours and eat appetizers and drink craft beer and listen to albums straight through. And the quality on those LPs are awesome. When you got a real good player and a great speaker. And the difference for me with that is there's a lot of, if I can describe it as open air, there's space. And there's a feeling with LPs that's just incredible. And if an analog recording, which some of the old, all of the old recording was, if you had distortion on it, it can become a part of the music. But digital distortion, you can't have. There's a fine line.
Right.
As soon
right.
as you get into distortion in digital, the music is done. But in analog, you can get a little louder, and it adds to the quality of the music. So there's an entire different feel when you're listening to the LP and the way it was recorded. So I'm a big fan of that, and I love to see it coming back.
It is, yeah. It's yeah.
And it's not just now. It's been coming back for a while.
But, oh, yeah. There was this big resurgence that I think looked like it was going to be a fad and go away, and then it sort of came back and sort of steadied. But what I've noticed more recently is the new releases. Like, there was all these re-releases, I think, from the big companies going, oh, let's capitalize on this, right? Yeah. But
bands. Yeah.
It's, I'd say the most common, obviously, 100% digital. Everybody does that. And then I'd almost say the next common one is vinyl, maybe with CD, because quite frankly, you know, the if you're limited on costs, vinyl has a something that streaming doesn't offer. CD is really streaming on a disc. There's the sound quality, I think, is pretty much the same, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And cassette, again, is more of, I think, a novelty factor. I don't think people are doing it for the quality.
No, for sure. But speaking of quality, too, I mean, a CD, I think a CD in most cases is 128K. Well, it can be more, but 128K, most people.
Yeah.
The sampling rate, most people can't hear the difference after that. Mm. But if you're in tune with it and you listen to something in a higher quality, you sure can. If you're in the music business and you're listening to it all the time, the quality makes a big
difference. So like you're saying a 256 stream would sound different to you, for instance, than a 128.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah,
talk to me in 256 and let me see if I can tell.
I just did.
Oh, dear. Yeah. you blew my mind. Oh, dear. Can we say that on the air? I think so.
I think that's okay.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Hey, my mind, come on in. Oh, dear. I don't know. I kid. I'm here all week.
You didn't know this was a comedy show.
No, well, it isn't really. Yeah. Let's play a song. So you picked, we can chat about it after, but I'm going to play the ZZ Top and you can tell me about it. This is In Studio with Kevin. We have our guest, Todd Elson, and this is CKMS 102.7 Radio Waterloo, available on Rogers Digital 946 and worldwide at... What is it worldwide? RadioWaterloo.ca/listen. ZZ Top.
Well, I was rolling down the road in some cold blue steel. I had a blues man on the back and a beautician out the wheel. We're going downtown in the middle of the night. We're laughing and I'm joking and we're feeling all right. Oh, I bet I'm nationwide. Yes, I bet I'm nationwide. Down the highway in a new Cadillac, I had a fine fox in front, I had three more in the back. They sported short dresses, wearing spiky on shoes. They smoked them lucky strikes and wearing nylons to go to bed. Nationwide. Yeah, we bad. Nationwide.
ZZ Top, I'm Bad, I'm Nationwide, here on In Studio with Kevin, back with Todd Elson. So, Todd, what about that song is special to you?
Well, just I would say ZZ Top in general to me was an eye-opening band for me that really opened my eyes to music. I think everybody has a moment in their life when something just says, wow, I really love this stuff. And that's what ZZ Top, this wasn't actually that song. It was their 1984 Eliminator album I heard first, but very soon after it was this one. And it's just a cool song. I love it. Love the blues, love Billy Gibbons as a guitar player. But it was really my first foray into a different style of music. Because as a kid, Kevin and I were talking about this off air. I used to wake up Sunday mornings. You know, it used to wake me up. My parents had the old stereo in the wooden furniture thing, you know, the floor model stereo with the 8-track.
Yeah.
And I'd wake up to Nana Muscuri or, you know, Placido Domingo or something.
Oh, dear.
And I
thought,
oh my, you know, and Placido Domingo to me wasn't as bad, but Nana Muscuri, I didn't care for that much. Mm. And a great singer and great, you know, I don't want to take anything away, but, I finally heard ZZ Top. I got a radio for Christmas one year. I used to wake up to music and there's this song that just, wow, what is that? So, you know, and it really changed. I think music can change your life. And for me, it did. It just got me into that. And from there, I just started looking for different music. And each couple of years in my teenage years into my 20s, I want to discover new things and new bands, new music. And they were the very first one. So that's why I asked you.
Right on. Is that a band you ever saw in concert?
Oh, many times.
Really? Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I ever went. They were on my to-do list once. And for whatever reason, I think I just never got around to it. And I don't know that they fell off my list.
Yeah, they put on a good show. You know, the big stadium shows, they put on a good show. But my favorite music, live music, is small venues.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I was so disappointed. I was visiting my brother in San Diego.
Okay.
And Billy Gibbons had a new band just on a side project. He was going to play in Solana Beach. And I thought, oh, exciting. Because I'm traveling there and it worked out perfect. And I was going to buy tickets. I missed them by a day.
Oh, no.
I couldn't go. But I'd still go see them, but I'd prefer it in a small venue. And that was a small venue. So,
yeah, that would be. That would be good. What's speaking of that? So what's a band that you saw in a small venue that you like? You was most memorable, or that was either the biggest band or?
You know what? It was probably Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh wow!
Yeah, where did you before see him? He passed away.
Well, I hope so.
You know what? It wasn't. I can't say it was a small venue, but at least I did see him at the Sky Dome. And when you say that, oh my God, that's not a small venue, but they tented it off.
Okay.
So it wasn't the full, I'd seen concerts there and it's a terrible place to see them.
It is. Well, yeah, it is.
But they tented it off on the ruling, on the ceiling and then on the sides. So it was actually much, much smaller, probably less than a third of the size.
Okay.
So the sound wasn't echoey, but I can say that, that was really memorable because it was right before he died and he played with Jeff Beck and Jeff Healy and three great guitar players there. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But now guitar players, small venues, I go and I see Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, the instrumental stuff at Massey Hall. I love that.
Yeah.
And
okay.
More recently I saw a couple of bands at the Sony Center. Downtown Toronto.
Is that that's the old Hummingbird Center?
Yeah, that's
okay.
And it's great acoustics. And
yeah.
Not a bad seat there, and the sound is awesome.
Right on. I'm trying to think. It was Tea Party, I think I saw with Nora Jones's sister and dad. Their names are escaping
Rank,
me.
Rank, he's a sitar player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his other daughter.
Ravi, is it Ravi?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know why I'm blanking, but they did a sort of set at, it wasn't, real good story. I don't know who I saw and I don't really know where. It was somewhere in Toronto. It was like not Massey Hall. It was more of a theater setting, you know, that place where they do shows.
The Elgin Theater.
Maybe, that's or the Ed Mervish, one of those. Yeah. There's parking in the area.
Great, great venues though to watch music. I love it. Any show, it doesn't matter who it is. I love to see new artists in a live situation in a small venue. It's more of an intimate setting. You get to see them.
Well, speaking of which, Todd, now it's funny you mentioned that. I'll give you a peek. It may have, if you're very avid listeners to the station, I know some shows have alluded to it. I'm trying to build up this massive tease, but we've got a fundraiser that's going to be launching imminently for the station. And as part of that, we're going to have a really special event, and I'll give you some of the info because it'll fit right into what you were talking about. So let's see. I can either tell you about one of the bands, the venue, or the date. I'll just give you two out of those three. So I guess you're probably, yeah, I'll give you the date and the place. That's a real interesting story. No. So the band, so it's March 24th. Let's put that out there. So March 24th, there will be an event. We'll get some details on how to get access to it. It's going to be pretty exclusive. And definitely a small venue. It's a bit of a non-traditional venue, but a small, intimate for music. We're going to have the Jenny Howes Duo. We're going to have the Faulty Rivals and Crimson Breed that will all be playing that night. And I know Crimson Breed is intending to do a special Unplugged, which, as far as I understand, they haven't done before in a live setting. So that should be pretty cool. Like, they've got their stuff's pretty rocking.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd be the place is almost, if they played the full, if they brought their full equipment in there, it'd probably, you know, break some windows.
Blow the doors open.
It's, you know, it'd be great, but I think it's perfect for Unplugged. So that's March 24th. We'll get some more info out. Yeah, so for how folks can go see that, but I think that's going to be one of those type of events. I remember I saw another one that I saw. He was huge. We're talking about bands that are talented or artists, but this guy just disappeared. So I don't know what happened. But Remy Shand, remember this guy?
I do. Yes.
He was, I think, from Winnipeg, Canadian guy, anyways. And it was like reggae, hip hop,
some mix in between there.
It, you know, just really not my sort of typical style of music, but I quite liked his stuff. He was very, very talented. I saw him in some small club in Hamilton, like, where I don't think there was 30, 40 people there. That was something, like, just to, like you said, to be that close, and I just get completely mesmerized watching artists.
You and I go see Helix in a small venue?
Oh, that's
close,
right.
Close to home here, right?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. And that's right. Helix, another, he's Brian's from Kitchener. They should be doing their 40th anniversary tour pretty soon. They're still operating. They're playing at Heavy Montreal. So Heavy MTL, Heavy Montreal is in July. Helix, I'm pretty sure I saw their name on there. Yeah, I'm not going to go.
No, but the point for me is just that we you go and you see it, and live, it's different.
Oh, yeah.
It's just different when you see somebody that's up there, and the talent, that doesn't matter what kind of music.
Oh, yeah.
But the talent that you need to have to play live and to entertain people for a while, I always appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. So no, I forgot all about that. Thanks, Todd. That's right. We saw Helix. The place, it was in Cambridge, and the place is closed down, unfortunately, whatever it was. It was somewhere in Galt. But we also saw him another time a few years, not that long ago. There was a event, the history of Canadian rock. I should really remember stuff, eh?
Was that at the Opera House?
The one we went
to?
Yeah,
that was at the Opera House in Toronto.
There was a book release. Some fellow had written a book on Canadian.
Metal on Ice.
Metal on Ice. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, I think that was 3 years ago. So Metal on Ice. And we met Lee Aaron.
She still looks great too.
Yeah, Brian Vollmer was there. There was a bunch of bands, bunch of all Canadian stuff, and they performed. And it was that was really something. That was a real fun event. And like you said, they weren't new bands. There's a different energy, I think, when you have younger bands starting out, that they're, you know.
No, that was fun though. It was good to see the old bands still having fun and making music.
And so, your band, separate from your solo project, you're out playing. You're not playing now, but you do go out, play live. What's that band called?
Acoustic Company.
Acoustic Company. Yes. So I guess, should I guess that you play acoustic music or no?
It's all cellos.
Of course.
It's all acoustic guitars.
Okay.
We took
how many?
three.
Okay, so that's a lot.
Three acoustics, we're all playing different parts, and we have one kick drum.
What do you mean, like one guy plays the fret, the other guy plays?
Yeah. Something like that. No, okay. We trade off on what we're doing, but harmonies with the vocals, so it was really a band that we wanted to do something a little different, and something like a Mumford and Sons, where you have one kick drum, we have that to drive the beat, and it's fun. It's really fun. We do mostly covers in that band, but started writing some of our own, but I think all three of us have our own projects going on the side too. And I'm really busy, as I mentioned to you, with my kids and hockey.
Yeah.
So I got to take a back seat right now.
But you expect at some point to get back out, play a couple of gigs? Okay, we'll make sure to let us know. We can hopefully I don't know, are we too far out? Is Kitchener-Waterloo region too far out of the range?
Not at all.
Yeah, there's some good places to play out here. So when you guys are back, we'll try and hook something up. Do you want to play another song here? Let's see, you had given me a couple other ones. There's one I've never heard. So
which one?
The Mr. Big song.
Oh, that's a great song. Play that one. It's awesome.
Just refresh me, because I did make a playlist.
That's green song, Green Tinted 60s Mind.
Yeah. Now how did you like? I remember you. Those are what would you call those bands that you like? Like I had a bad name for them that I won't use. But Mr. Big, I like Extreme, but they're. Is it like a higher pitched male vocalist with really tight spandex?
At one point, I think they were, and not anymore.
But that wasn't why you listened to them.
No, part of the reason I listened to them was the guitar player was Paul Gilbert. He's world renowned. He's an incredible guitar player, and you'll hear it here. He has a great intro in this song, but it's just a good song. I love the theme of the song and the guitar playing in the song as well.
Cool. Mr. Big on In Studio with Kevin on 102.7 CKMS.
Easy as a horse to ride, 3, 10, and 60.
go. So that was, what did we call him? Mr. Big. And you were talking, Todd, it's the guitar
Well, yeah, Paul Gilbert, the guitar player, is a world-renowned player, and you know, one of my favorite stories of this band is that the bass player Billy Sheehan is a Canadian. And he's again world-renowned. He's an incredible musician. He's played with Steve Vai, and Mr. Big here, and multiple other musicians, and they can call on that guy, and he can fit in with any band. He's a talented individual. But so is Paul Gilbert, and you know, their first this poppy, more poppy album that you heard here. I just liked the sound of that song. Their first album was really kind of a hard rock, almost bordering on metal sound.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
They made a bit of a change, but yeah, great music, great guitar player.
And you were I know you were always into the more intricate guitar stuff. That would be whatever sort of drove your interests. So I'm going to have to find, after the show, I'll see if I can find it for you. But I was telling you that Kevin Estrella, he plays a piece of guitar. I've only found like one song, so I don't know how varied he is. But this one piece would, I think, fit right into that. It's just like some of the Steve Vai I've listened to.
Yeah, I like that
it's
stuff.
Crazy. And there's another band, I don't know if you'd be into. It's a little different, but... also Canadian band, the fellows out of Montreal. He's a bassist, but he plays, I think it's a 11-string bass.
Wow. Some,
yeah, it's called the Frankenstein or whatever. He sort of started to get a following in a particular band, and that was sort of their thing. And now he's restarted. So it's called Von Dogma Eye.
It's a cool name.
And it's heavy on the bass, obviously. Like, there are other instruments, but it's...
Reminds me of the story. Say, well... I have a bass that's 4 strings, and he'll say, no, but this one goes to 11.
Yes, it's a Spinal Tap version of the bass.
But
this
bass. One goes to 11.
It's pretty wild, which is incredible. I mean, I have, you know, no capability of playing any of these instruments, so I find a 4-string bass or a 6-string guitar pretty amazing.
I'd love to see that bass. I've never actually seen an 11-string bass. How do you get your hands on that thing?
It's insane. Let's see. You know what? I wonder if I could find it. Well, I can find it. I know I have a picture right on my page. Well, this is his here. I'll just very quickly. I don't have the cameras set. I could give you we should put the camera. There we go. Live.
Wow.
Onto the page so people can watch the computer with us. But yeah, it's pretty intense. There we go. So
wow,
Von Dogma Eye. Yeah, we'll I'll put it on afterwards.
It's more like a keyboard.
It's Like, I mean, he's playing it. I don't even know how. I don't know how you get there. Like, I mean, how and where do you order one? Right. I'll take 2.5 basses, and if you just put them together and make the strings different and. You know, do whatever it is you do over there at the
You know what?
Store.
I'm a guitar player, and 6 strings for me. I love the 6 strings. Even the 7 strings, there's 8 strings now.
It's well, I mean, 12 was big for a while, wasn't
it? Yeah, but 12 string is fit into a similar size as a 6-string.
Right.
It's an octave, right? It's like you can tune it any way you want.
But it was designed to play as a 6-string. Right. You were just...
Right, it's a bigger sound, and it's like a harmony almost when you're
seven or eight is different. Now you're adding
and it's
strings.
It's a thicker neck, and
that's what she said.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means. Yeah. Again, we have writers for the show, and so they just give me stuff to
talk
say.
To them afterwards.
That's what she said.
I prefer the 6-string. That's all I can say.
And I could just keep saying that for the rest of the show. It'll be funny for me, not for anybody else. So you were talking about the kids are in hockey. So what age and how many?
Actually, I have 4 kids.
Right. Okay.
4 kids. And, if somebody asked me when I started working in the music business, I was going to have 4 kids, I would have told them they were nuts.
Yes.
So it's funny where life takes you. But I have a daughter that's 21.
Okay.
Just turned 21, done post-secondary education and working.
Okay, cool.
And
good for her.
Son finishing high school.
Yeah.
And then the 2 youngest ones are the busy ones. The older ones get easier.
Yeah.
Because they're off and doing their own things. Boyfriends, girlfriends, they have a life. And my kids, we're their life, right? So we drive them to hockey. They're both playing AA hockey. So it's busy.
And that's 2 boys?
2 boys.
Okay.
So, give you an example. This past Sunday, the last 2 weeks of the season, it's every single day I'm in an arena.
Really?
For 2 weeks. And wow. During the season, that's what it's like. You get the odd night off, but it's busy.
And are they on two different teams? Yes, then, okay, so you potentially have double. Like, are they often at the same arena at least?
No, sometimes, but not often. And I'm on the coaching staff of one, and on the other one, I help out on the ice. And next year, I'll be on the coaching staff for two. So, when we talk about the music and being able to play live, it's just too busy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like you said, yeah, trying to coordinate all that. And
you have two kids.
Yes, right, two girls, yeah, and it's busy, but it's manageable, and I mean, it's we've tried to sort of structure our schedules in a way that works well. So far, so good. You know, we're not, but we are. For example, yeah, we do have a dance competition this weekend in London. Now that you mentioned that, so
is that yours or your daughter's?
Yeah, well, no, unfortunately, yeah, they fortunately for everybody, they haven't allowed me in.
But oh no,
so yeah, my oldest daughter has got dance Saturday and Sunday, so we'll go down to London. But it's, I know what you mean. Like it's we're still at the younger end. They're both in, you know, teenagers, so or young teenagers, so. Well, I know my youngest hearing that will say, no, I'm not. So a preteen and a teenager. And it's pretty manageable. Tonight, we're actually going to go to a pretty neat event at the Waterloo Airport. So I'm glad another good thing that with the weather not turning out too bad is nothing gets canceled. But there's a really cool launch party, I guess is what it's called, event. It's at the Waterloo Airport tonight at 7, and it's Jody Sparrow, who's either a student or recent graduate of University of Waterloo, who's launched the Winged Warriors chapter of the flight club out there, and it's to empower women in aviation.
Really cool.
So she's like 20 years old, she's a pilot, she's, you know, very close to having a commercial license, which is a lot of fun.
That's a lot of hours.
Far. Yeah.
At least 150
it's, hours. Yeah.
200.
She's close. And then she just graduated and she's also a ballet dancer. So as far as it's all I know so far. So I'm going to take the girls to see that tonight, which is going to be.
That's interesting.
Which is going to be cool. Yeah. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think about that, you know, as we're gracefully aging and going, okay, you know, at 20, it's funny. I myself did some flying lessons when I was like 17, and I got somewhat along the way to a license, but I didn't finish to get a license. But a friend of mine that I was doing the courses at the same time, he finished. He went into commercial and works in that industry. But he had his license before he was 18. You know, certainly when we were 20, I don't think we were.
No, not
doing
even
stuff
close.
Like that necessarily. Playing a few pinball games. You actually, if I recall, at one point, this pinball machine, Phantom of the Opera, created a bit of a work problem. And if I recall, you got thrown out of the store for playing pinball.
That wasn't on the job, though.
No, that's the weirdest thing.
Yeah,
it was a store you worked in where you weren't even working. And I remember we play pinball in there, and it was a strange place. I mean, we could start. I don't know if we really want to name names,
no,
but there's
no,
a lot of characters. Eh? I mean, there's a
sure was.
There's a soap opera. So not to go on a tangent, but I'll tie it back into this, and it'll be maybe interesting. But one of my other projects I'm thinking of doing is radio acting, because I was talking to a few different people, and that used to be a big thing a long, long time ago. Like people would do little skits and do them on radio. And I thought, well, that's something I might be able to do. So maybe I'm going to look into doing that, but maybe that could be an inspiration for me.
That's a storyline right there.
Is some of those characters, like I'm thinking of naming one of them Guido. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, that'd be a good one. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It's going to take viewership right away from Scandal, I'll tell
you.
You'll be listening to Kevin on the radio with that.
I can use their actual first names. I mean, nobody knows what
I'm talking
about.
Last names.
And if they do, yeah? Yeah, well, I don't remember all the last names.
No, I said you don't have to mention last
okay.
names. First names
I'll
are
have
fine.
Two different people. How about one guy named Grant? And then his wife will be this.
This is only funny to me and Kevin right now. Stay tuned for the skit.
Yeah, but see, I think it could be something, right? And then, you know, all these people. Well, there's only a few names that are sticking in my head, and I don't want to say them because they bring feelings of pain and misery to me.
How about the other one could be Cinderella?
Cinderella, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't a glass shoe, though, was it?
No,
I don't
know what it was. No.
But, I don't know. Now, she was the one stealing, though, wasn't she, in the end? Yes. Like, see, that's I'm going to write the plot because I never found anything out. No, nobody knows what we're talking about, and that's okay. Yeah. But did you know this, or are you just 100% sure that that's really the only logical thing?
All I can say is it stopped as soon as the...
Cinderella left?
Cinderella left, yes.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, see, there's some more characters now coming back. There was... Oh, geez, I can't remember. I'll have to... I'll get some names from you. I'll start taking names.
Sweet Cheeks.
But just...
That could be a character as well.
We're believe it or not, it's 127, but I don't want to cut it too short, but I did want to mention, you talked about Jerry a little bit, but certainly that was obviously not funny because it's tragic, but I mean, one of our I guess the reason Todd and I, or one of the reasons Todd and I we got together was I was good friend, well, Jerry, who's your cousin, also worked with us, and then I ended up really good friends with him. Once we all moved our separate ways, I ended up living with him for a couple of years in Brampton before I got married. And then he went off to do his thing out west in Saskatchewan. And I sort of drifted apart a bit from him. And I think you and I also were not in very constant contact. But I, sadly, and he died tragically, it's going to be 5 years.
5 years this year, I
think. September 11th, 2013. Jerry was shot and killed in his house by a police officer. And, I remember you called me, and it was, at least from my recollection, what I remember is you called and you said, "Hey, it's Todd." And we were not enough in touch that I remember you said, "You're probably wondering why I'm calling you." And I was like, "Yeah." And you're like, "Well, I'm sure you said it nicer, but you're like, well, Jerry's dead," or something like that. And
I'm not sure it was that blunt.
but it was, so it was pretty obviously very unexpected, right? It had and continues to have a really big impact on my life. And I get in a sad way, and it's something I know Jerry would like jump all over me for, because I love him way more now than I ever did, or think higher of him now than I ever did. And I'm sure he'd be going, "Yeah, that's just, because the guy's dead, and you wouldn't do that if he was alive." And I'd be like, "Yeah, probably not.
It's human nature.
It's the fact is there's nothing, there's no new material. I don't know how else to put it, right? But how have you been with that?
I miss him. Huh, I miss him for sure.
Yeah.
It's been a long time now. He's been gone, but, same thing. I mean, you remember the good memories, right? Not the bad stuff, but there was, when you're going through something, it's like they say, right? I mean, hours and days drag on, but years fly by, right? Yeah. When you look back on something and somebody's gone, you have a tendency to remember the good stuff and say, "I should have paid more attention." But there were things, like you said, I think when you made his tribute to him on air here, he could be his own worst enemy for everybody. But deep down, he was a great guy. He was a big teddy bear, really. And he just wanted to be friends, and he wanted to love somebody, be loved back. And he unfortunately died young, and we're trying to remember the good stuff, right?
Yeah. But I mean, even the, at least some of the bad stuff ends up good stuff. I mean, there's too many crazy things. But I know he's actually, but I will say in all truthfulness that he's really sort of become helpful to me in terms of a reference that I can go to, right, in my mind. But even as just stuff, things that I might have to deal with and stuff, I can use him for perspective, right? Yeah. And I mean, he was just uncanny with his, you know, he had lots of talents, and one of them that always was frustrating is he could just like nail stuff. He would see something and identify it like out of nowhere, and he didn't filter himself at all. So
especially with people, right?
It came across wrong, but he would read people before you even met them. He's like, that guy's an idiot, or that's a great guy. I think usually it was more that guy's an idiot that would come out really loud, and it turned out that the guy was, you know, 500 pounds and wasn't, or was, you know, packing heat. So, but it was, yeah, he was uncanny. He was never wrong. Like, right, he'd pick out like that.
He could cut through the crap. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, amazingly. Yeah. And I mean, he was same thing with music. Like he'd pick out stuff out of nowhere. And he's like, yeah, I'm listening to this now. And it wasn't even stuff that was popular that just wasn't in my arena. It's like, nobody's heard of this. And he's like, yeah, I found this. And it's like, okay. Yeah, I think the only bad one he steered me onto, and I'm not even sure he really steered me onto it, he just maybe mentioned them, and I misunderstood that he was telling me they're good, was the Insane Clown Posse. You ever heard those guys?
I don't think I have.
Oh, geez, well, don't.
He didn't steer me onto those. Maybe you were experimental.
Yeah, maybe he was testing it out. But, oh, if you've never heard of them, almost everybody's heard of them, because they, I believe at one point they were named as a terrorist group by the FBI. These guys, it's the music is just absolutely horrible. I tell you, it's well, awful.
They must have been a terrorist group. They were that bad.
Oh, but anyways, yeah. There's a whole read up on it. It's wild. But like I said, I don't think maybe he didn't tell me they were good. I think he just said, "Oh, you got to check them out. They're so like out there because they are wacko." But anyhow, I said we'd only have a few minutes, and then it took us over time here. That's okay. So any final thoughts, Todd? I should probably give the airwaves back to the folks that are supposed to be on right now.
Thanks for having me here. It's been fun. It's always good to see you.
And likewise, Todd.
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to come back at one point. I'd bring the guitar.
Bring the guitar. Maybe we can tie something into the album release, or if not, maybe you record it here. Okay, and then it's a live stream. We'll come up with something. We'll see if we can get the bandwidth to pipe all this through. Thank you very much, Todd. Let's fade out with, I think we'll probably just jump to the show that's supposed to be on. It is 1:34 on CKMS 102.7. This was In Studio with Kevin. Have a great day.